Welcome to Aspire. This Aspire radio program is for Halloween, October 31st, 2020. And if there isn't enough to scare you this year, there never will be. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my. I want to thank you for listening to our Halloween. You know, we're going to be talking about what you would imagine us to talk about, our fears and what fear is. So I don't think that comes as any surprise to you. And for those of you who are sponsors of our radio program and Aspire in general, you got your message of the month this year, and it was all spooky and everything. I have a lot of fun at Halloween. It is one of my very favorite holidays, this and Thanksgiving. So I'm really hoping that you enjoy the radio program today and that you enjoyed the message of the month for October and the discourses that I offered on change, which is one of the things that most people are most afraid of, according to Pew Research, believe it or not. So let's talk about fear and what fear is all about for us. What are you afraid of? What are you afraid of? Obviously, people are afraid of dying. And what is fear? We're afraid of suffering. What is fear? We're afraid that we won't get what we want. What is this thing called fear that we get involved in? Well, according to the dictionary, it's a huge, huge sense of anxiety, even entering into depression. It's a part of us that feels the anxiety of maybe something coming on that is going to promise either death or pain or sorrow. And we get involved in all of this, and we think to ourselves, oh, what does this mean to me, this fear? What is the worst thing that can happen to me? And we go on and on and on with that and ruminate over that, obsess and compulse over it. In my own life, I just want to say this. All the worrying and the fretting and the fear that I have ever had in my life has never come to pass. Never. Not one single inch of it. And I find that very interesting. And as I learned what my own fears were, what the Gregory fears the most, I see that it is something that is brought on by the emperor of all malice within him. Everybody has this emperor. What is this emperor of all malice? It is more than just the ego. It is the persona of our lifetime. It is the way we live in the genetics and the primitive aspect of us. This primitive aspect of us correlates with our deepest fear of survival and makes us kind of crazy. So let's take a look at the questions for today, and let's see if we can maybe do a little, unearthing of our fears here. The first question comes from Raymond in Connecticut. He actually gave me his location. That's really kind. And he says, why is fear bad? It can save us, you know. Raymond, this is a popular idea among human beings. Very popular. I had a sponsor years ago who talked about the same idea you did. This guy was in Poway, California. I'll never forget it. You know, he claimed that fear would save people. You have to have fear to cross the street, yada da yada da, because if you're afraid of the cars and na na na, then you're going to be okay, and all of this craziness. And of course, it was the stupidest thing I've ever heard. And Raymond, whatever happened to awareness? To be aware of where you are and the situations you might find yourself in. Whatever happened to just being aware? Is that so difficult? Well, for the most part, it is for human beings. To be aware, what does that mean? To be aware of, I'm at a street. I am aware of the cars going by. Do I have to apply fear in order to be aware? Do I have to apply emotional fear to understand my place, my situation in this world? Do I have to do that? Well, yeah. If you're of the pedestrian mentality, yeah. That's what you have to do. You have to think in terms of, oh, something is going to be taken away from me, my life, if I am not afraid emotionally and heightened in my emotions of being in harm's way. But also with that will come an overreaction that could get me killed as well. So I don't want to say that you're right, because it isn't going to save you. As my friend in Poway, he just didn't get it. You put awareness, because you probably have none, in some category that it doesn't belong in. And because you don't have any awareness, you're left to your senses, your biological, emotional senses, your DNA, your genetics, your heightened sense of insecurity in your body. Your body is clicking away with all sorts of chemicals, oxycon, the serotonins, the whole thing. And you start to look at it and you think, I've got to use my chemicals. I've got to use my testosterone to get across the street. I've got to be aware. You know, it isn't like that at all. It really doesn't have to be. You can live in the calm abiding of your awareness and see a situation for what it is before you enter into it. If you use your mind, you will only think from thoughts. Thoughts that are about emotionality, about the emperor who is sitting there inside of you, dictating to you danger and pleasure and pain and potential sorrow and all of that other stuff. You could do that, and that's what most people do, because they're not meditative and they haven't cultivated awareness. Or you could really just be aware. And this would mean that you would have had to have practiced meditation. You would have had to have practiced some kind of loving kindness inside you. You would have had to have practiced some kind of sense of presence about you, where you understand the nature of yourself beyond the confines of the ego, the vanity, the pride of us. You would have to see things as they are, where they are, in the proportion that they are in. And to do that requires no thought whatsoever. You see, Raymond, there is something beyond the idea of emotionality and thought. This thing that is beyond emotionality and thought is called the gap. And once you understand the gap, you understand where it lives in you, the space between your thoughts, between your breath even. Once you are aware of that, a ton of information comes to you. And it doesn't come in the form of thought. It comes in the form of knowing what you need to do next. Now, to get to that place, you have to practice. And that would really serve you well. It would more than save us. It would transcend us. It would bring us into awareness. There is an ability that human beings have that they don't seem to understand very well, nor are they much interested in, and it's called the impression. And this impression lives between your thoughts. It is also the gateway not only to wisdom, but to seeing what is going to happen before it happens. And if you can see that, if you can recognize that, you won't be able to do it with thoughts. You will only be able to do it with silence, an abiding kind of quiet, a calm that allows you to recognize what's about to happen before it actually happens. You can do this. If I can do it, anyone can do it. So you don't have to be a soothsayer. You don't have to be a fortune teller. That's not what we're talking about. It is how you live within yourself. And in living within yourself in that manner, you will have access to a load, like I said, of information. And this information will change the way you occupy yourself. You won't occupy yourself with thought, but it will be impression. You can do this with practice. That's what spiritual practice is all about. There you are. Enough said. This probably went right over your head and doesn't make, I'll hear this over and over with people, that doesn't make a bit of sense to me. Well, that's why, because it's not about sense. It's about the inwardness. It is about a life and a world that lives within you that is beyond your senses. And you can do this, but you won't. Which is why the world is the way the world is. Happy Halloween. Please forgive me. Namaste. You know, we don't use much of what we are at all. Not even remotely. And when you tell people about something that is beyond the confines of what they think they are, they get very skeptical of you. But they are never skeptical of their own fear. They are never skeptical of that. If you treated your fears as you do your attributes, your spiritual attributes, you'd be a lot further ahead. But that's not what people do. The next question comes from Jess in Nevada. If people are not afraid, they will not do what is right. The only way to make it right is to show them the consequences. Jess, this is an excellent question. Really, it is, and thank you. In many ways, you're right. In many ways. The average person with the average mentality of the pedestrian can only operate out of fear. They don't operate out of love. They think love is that which is emotional. And they're always looking for love, and they're always looking for the human aspect of love, never the deeper, more profound aspect of love. So, yeah, you're right about that. To the average person, if they aren't afraid, they won't do anything. And when fear is taken away from the human psyche, left to itself, people run amok. And that is true. I have seen it for myself. But just because all of that is true doesn't make it what you say of as right. People live out of self-preservation. And to live out of that, they live out of self-righteousness. You put self-preservation and self-righteousness together in a little convenient package inside the head, and you have the emperor, and you have also a person who thinks whatever they're doing is right, and that's the way it should be. Why isn't it we won't do kindness without being afraid, or even be polite to each other without fear? That's the real question. What role does fear play? What does it do? It modifies behavior. It dictates dictates the behavior. And once you understand that it dictates behavior, modifies behavior, then you start to also understand at the same moment what is happening within thee and me. You have a human being. And in that human being, the only thing that matters is life over death. And there is a constant fight for life over death, over and over and over again. We have made this the consequence of our life. There are consequences. I am a teacher, Jess, of consequence. I try to show my students, if you do this, this is very much what could happen to your life. And it is about turning out like your parents, turning out like the collective unconscious. In fact, living from the collective unconscious and being susceptible to it. And there are people who are very weak-kneed, who are extremely susceptible to the collective unconscious. So if it's in the air, they'll catch it, and it will eventually be a problem for them. The consequence of how we live so loveless without the principles of understanding what this world is all about, and that of the, shall we say, state of higher consciousness, is a very, very important thing. Very important. We miss. Most of us miss our entire life and reduce it down to the limitations of our collective beliefs about each other, about life, about what we're doing here in this world. We just squander this life away. Just squander it. So, yes, you are right. The average person needs a threat over their head constantly to do what you call right. Now, I don't know what you're calling right, okay? But I am assuming it means the order of society, how society originates, how it orientates itself in some kind of order where we just don't, you know, have guns on our hips and shoot each other because we don't like the way somebody looked at us. I am assuming that's what you mean. That's a pure assumption on my part, and I could be wrong. But whatever it is that I deem right is not going to be upheld by the consequences. Now, listen to me, Jess. My students have been warned and taught by me for years how to live more consciously within themselves. I am ardent on it. And if you were to ask them, they would tell you, yes, he's always telling us to be aware of this, that, and the other, and that if I do this, the consequence could be over here, over there, and I don't know exactly what it could be, but it could be. They will, and I guarantee it, throw that away, ignore it, forget it, and go and do what they want anyway. You're going to do it anyway, so why not do it, as one of my students says. Because they're impulsed by their fears. Fear is more important to the average person than you might imagine. People will say that they're meditators, but they're not. Because they're full of fear. They're not willing to end their life. Their life as they know it in the consequence of hate and fear and anger. They wouldn't give up their emotions, their passions, their desires, their ambition, their pride, their vanity. They'd never give it up. It's not something they're willing to shed. So when you think in terms of doing what is right and the consequences, as you say in your email, forget it. They don't think there'll be any. All Americans like to think that they're the greatest people in the world because they think they belong to the greatest country in the world, which they don't. And so they think their poop don't stink. It's the way it is. Their crap don't stink. So they can do whatever they want. And they think they're free. Until they have to write out a check to the IRS or they see what their leaders are doing. And doing things that are, well, against the law, but they are above the law because they are officials of the government, blah, 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 blah. I had one guy locally here who was running for office, and, you know, his daughter told me that he said, you know, the great thing about running for office is you get immunity for the things that most people have to pay the price for. I thought, yeah, he's a typical politician. Yeah, that's absolutely right. So there's no end to the craziness, Jess. Until we understand our own psychology and what makes us the way we are, we're just going to keep having the same world that we have now. And this same world is going to go on and on and on and on, and it's going to be ugly and totally unnecessary. Please forgive me. Namaste. If that doesn't scare you on this Halloween. Okay. I'm 100 memories are coming into me right now as I'm sitting here waiting for this last question. I just think of things that students have said. I'm tired of being so afraid, said Ramsey. Now what do I do? And I can't meditate, Ramsey. And he doesn't tell me where he's from. I love your name, Ramsey. I went to a school when I was a kid, Ramsey, when I was, kindergarten through first grade, I think it was. It was a military school. My parents thought I needed to be straightened out. That didn't work. Ramsey, you're tired of being afraid? Then don't be afraid. You'll have to accept your life as it comes to you. And you're going to have to be meditative. You're going to have to look at your life beyond the confines of how you live your life. If you defined your life one way and you're living another, then you are at odds with your own life. So the object of the game here is to live in this world, but not let the world live in you. That's the whole trip. Now, you can do this, but if you're going to do it, you're going to have to do it consciously. You're going to have to make the meaning of your life the way of your life, your lifestyle, as it were. You're going to have to put into effect what the meaning of your life is. Maybe it's in creativity, which I think is one of the highest. Maybe it's in service to humankind. Maybe you will help people, children. You will volunteer. You will do things that deliberately break the fearful, assumptuous kind of consequence you think you're in store for. Go towards the thing you're most afraid of. It's what I do. The thing I'm most afraid of, I go towards. Greg is most afraid of dying. He doesn't like any of it, but he goes to hospice, you know, every week, works very hard at it, has for over 30 years, and he knows that I'm going to go. He doesn't like it. It didn't change anything in him, but it's brought about insight into death. It helps you understand death more, shall we say, beyond the mental confines of intellect. So now I'm impressed by it. I see the value of how to live, and death has taught me how to live in a more, shall we say, beautiful manner. But you got to remember something. If you don't face your fears, my darling Ramsey, they're going to come after you. Happy Halloween, and please forgive me. Namaste. I'm out of here. I hope you have a very beautiful Halloween. I do. I hope it's a quiet, a safe one, and I will see you tomorrow as we enter into the Thanksgiving season. Wow! Please forgive me, eh? Namaste.